everyone, and welcome back. Today is Friday, January 8th, 2010. My name is Angela Walton Raji, and this is the African Roots Podcast. You can always reach me at africanrootspodcast@gmail.com. How is everyone doing today? It is the 8th of January. We are in the middle of winter, and it's pretty chilly here. We had a light snowfall here in the Mid-Atlantic last night. Just a couple of inches fell on this snowfall, but it's now windy and blustery, and we're getting that post-snowfall Arctic blast, so it's pretty chilly out there. I hope that wherever you are, you're able to stay warm. I understand it's pretty cold in many parts of the country as you just sort of look westward, and I hope that everyone is managing to stay pretty warm and comfortable. Anyway, things have begun. The new year is here, and things are being planned for the rest of the year. I've been very busy. I was at the National Archives yesterday, a good portion of the day. I am busy working on an all-day presentation that I will be giving on January the 30th at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, and I'm busy with that and looking forward to that. That's going to be an awful lot of fun. There's going to be it's a sort of a two-day event, really kicking off Black History Month in Western Arkansas, and I have the honor of speaking there, and I'm looking forward to that and busy getting ready for that as well. But there are other things that are coming up even sooner than that. Coming up in Oklahoma, Norman, Oklahoma, the Cleveland County Genealogical Society, they're having a beginning workshop on the 10th of January. So that's just coming up in a couple of days. And this is basically a beginner's everything you wanted to know about genealogy kind of workshop. It's called Genealogy 101 Basic Genealogy Skills. It's going to be in a classroom which is near the Cleveland Society, Genealogical Society Library, which is in the south entrance of the Community Service Building on East Main Street in Norman. And it's from 2 to 5 p.m. There is registration, $15 registration. There may be a slight increase if you register late for that, but I have some information, a contact phone number for you. But I like beginning workshops. Number one, even if you're not quote-unquote a beginner, it's good to go and just refresh your skills, see what's new that you may not even be aware of that's new. And of course, those who are just thinking about getting started, who really have not really pursued as much as they could or need some ideas and tips on how to organize what they're finding, it's always good to go and sit in on some of those. I know that one of the topics that they are going to include will be how to organize what you already know about your family and where to find additional information. So if you're in middle Oklahoma, in Cleveland County, wonderful opportunity coming up to get started and to really learn how to organize what you're doing. I was excited to hear about a new oral history project. And you know, I really like oral history and always encourage people to get involved with capturing those stories from elders as much as possible. Well, there is a joint venture apparently that has been launched, or it's about to begin. It's a venture between the Mississippi Department of Archives and History and the University of Southern Mississippi, as well as the Mississippi Humanities Council. And this is primarily focusing on the Greenville, Washington County Joint Historic Preservation Commission. And they're going to be working on collecting oral histories within the county. Now, from what I understand, that the preservation project has received a grant, a $1,500 grant from the Mississippi Humanities Council for the project. And there's some more information that I'm putting for you on the podcast website. But I want to make a comment about that. One of the things that a lot of times I know that I've asked people, well, gee, have you ever thought of capturing interviews maybe from a particular community? And many people are under an impression that an oral history project has to be a massive undertaking. Here, this group has received a $1,500 grant. You don't necessarily need $1,500 to initiate a project. We're talking about having, though, an organized strategy. Simply get some ideas on questions in common that you're going to ask individuals. Identify whatever that population is. For example, it doesn't have to be something where an entire county is going to be covered. That would be an expensive undertaking. There's training for the interviewers, equipment for the interviewers, transportation to and from, and that would be something that's grand. And many people feel that an oral history initiative has to be something that is really a massive undertaking. It can be done very inexpensively, but it has to be done in an organized manner. And who are the people who are to be targeted? You can find people to be targeted in so many ways. You could start within your own family. Do you have 2 people, 3 people, 5 people in your family that are elders? Well, why not begin an effort to interview those 5 who have something in common? You and your family. Are there elders perhaps in your church? You know, a lot of churches have different circles. I know my grandmother used to belong to a circle, and I remember I was always confused. What do you mean a circle? I'm thinking of the shape, but oftentimes a circle was used to describe a group of individuals who had something in common, who would get together and would fellowship with each other to some degree. Well, why not start with some of those small groups of elders within a church community? Perhaps there is a residential facility, and there may be a group of people who have something in common. Perhaps just the fact that they live together or share a same senior citizen residence, or perhaps a senior center. Again, these are individuals who have something in common, that place that they frequent. It's not something that has to be, as I said, massive. But if you can identify 2, 3, 5, 7, 10 people, there can be a small oral history opportunity for you. And I really applaud the people from this oral history project that's going on in Greenville, Washington County. Their commission to collect oral histories. The most important thing is to make sure you have your questions organized well, that there's a format that you record it, and it doesn't have to be video, but definitely audio, and that you transcribe it and then preserve it. You donate those transcriptions and those tapes, and of course you're going to make backups of everything, but these are things that you really consider. You're making a contribution to the community and its history. Elders are too precious to overlook. So, you know, try and think of creative ways. Individuals who were part of perhaps a movement back in the 60s, if they were part of a group of individuals who in their younger years were involved with the civil rights movement, individuals whose ancestors or whose family members lived through the Depression. Identify 3, 5, 7 people and talk to them. Almost anything that's happened, they're individuals who have their personal stories to tell. And you know how I am. I believe everyone has a story, and I love to see those stories being told. But anyway, I'll have some more information. I'll get off my mantra right now and move on to some other things as well. But one thing I found that caught my attention also was a really interesting article. And I often look for opportunities to get involved with genealogy, but in a unique way. And what I mean by that, I like to find an opportunity to do what I do from a source that's an unexpected source. And an article that was shared with me in a newspaper was really something that got me thinking again. And this was an interesting newspaper article, about some individuals who had located an old suitcase full of photos. I'm sure many of you saw that article. I've seen it listed on a few message boards. I saw an article about it from Twitter. I think someone put it up on Facebook as well. And apparently someone found an old suitcase full of photos that had been stored in the crawl space of an attic of an old house. And these are individuals who had, I'm not sure if they had recently purchased the house or were renting it, but they found this and became curious about the ownership of the photos. What family were they connected to? Whose photos were they? And the article was actually a neat story. It was a wonderful story on how this long-lost photo collection was reunited with descendants of some of the individuals who are in those images. And again, as I said, there's a lesson in terms of our looking for opportunities to tell not just our own personal story. Keep in mind that your best friend may love you forever, but might not necessarily be thrilled to listen to you give a detailed lineage of your ancestry. Your family might, but your best friend might not. But everyone is still interested in stories. The stories of how you find those stories are more interesting as opposed to listening to the raw data or listening to a lineage of who was the father of whom, was the father of whom, was the father of whom, etc. But I know that when I read that article, I thought about something that I do frequently, and sometimes I'll go on auction sites just to see what's out there and what looks interesting. And even on sites like eBay, I sometimes see long lost photos, and in many cases the individuals are identified, and they're often for sale to the highest bidder. And I guess my point is to ask you if you've ever considered taking some time to research the history of the individuals whose names you sometimes find. It can be a name in an old text with a photo attached to it. It can be a collection of photographs that you see on eBay or on some other site. But have you ever stopped and looked and said, it might be interesting to pause and see what I could learn about that individual? Where are their descendants? I admire individuals who find those lost heirlooms and make an effort to try and reconnect them with descendants of those individuals from 100 years ago. It's just something that just touches me, because again, there's a story that's been saved for a generation that descended from those individuals in that picture. I know that sometimes I've gone to antique stores, even sometimes those thrift stores, or I call them junk stores, because there are all kinds of fun treasures in junk stores, but I've seen old family Bibles there. And have you run into something like that? And, you know, what do you think when you see them? Do you just sort of say, wow, sad that somebody's family Bible is here? But I encourage you to stop and think and to consider maybe a different kind of genealogical experience, the act of researching and reuniting an artifact from someone's family with a descendant of that family. It might just give you a different kind of experience. But I'm going to put a link to that story. I was fascinated and enjoyed reading it, and I hope that you will as well. I was happy to hear about a new project coming out of North Carolina, apparently, and I don't know how long this is going to take. Some, I think, has already unfolded out of the state of North Carolina. The State Archives has completed a project to digitize newspapers from its collections that they've had, and I'm hoping that this means that a majority, if not all of them, have been digitized. These are newspapers that they've always had, but they were available only on microfilm. And I just am enthralled with looking at old newspapers. And these are newspapers from the 1700s up through the late 1890s. And they're covering it's more than 20,000. I think the number was 23,000 digital images that are searchable, which to me is critical when you're looking for something to be able to put in a keyword. If you're putting in a particular town as a keyword. And some of these are from papers, and they listed towns like Edenton, Fayetteville, New Bern, Salisbury, Wilmington, and other places. And thankfully, they got a grant. I guess it was provided by the State Library of North Carolina. And newspapers are such wonderful tools to use. And you may or may not find an ancestor in a newspaper, but you may find contemporaries of your ancestors in an old newspaper. So if you see a newspaper, if you have a relatives, for example, from New Bern, North Carolina, and you have you know, the names of certain people who lived in your community, then I would say, well, look at the newspaper anyway. You may not necessarily find articles pertaining to your family, but as I said, you also want to remember to take your genealogy as an exercise in really documenting the history of a region, not just the history of your one lone family, because your one lone family did not live in isolation. They lived in a community. They had associates. They had peers. They had individuals. Even if they were individuals who were enslaved, they had individuals who in some way, shape, or form interacted with others, who had court cases, who had situations where people died. If you're in a situation with an enslaved ancestor, for example, you may have an ancestor who you know was enslaved by a particular person, and you're not quite sure where to go to find additional information about that slave owner. Because you know, after you have researched your family to a certain point, to 1870, and you've utilized and obtained all those vital records, you know that you must identify the slave owner, and once you do that, what do you do next? You research that person's history as much as you research your own. You may not necessarily know when or how an individual acquired those slaves, for example. Well, sometimes you might be surprised, and I use old newspapers particularly because I am fascinated by the ads in the back. You will find oftentimes information on what has occurred. If there's an estate sale, a slave owner passed away in 1842, let's say, and you realize there's going to be a division of the remains from the estate, sometimes you might find that posted. You may also find out some information about individuals who are looking for slaves. There were runaway slave notices posted in newspapers all the time before the Civil War. These are things that you can also learn, even if your ancestors never ran away, and this is not a part of your family history. Was there a prevalence of runaway slaves in the family or in the region, in that county? You have to stop and think, well, my ancestors perhaps never did, but this was happening in the community. This must have had an impact on those who were enslaved. There was something called an underground network. There was a communication network among slaves, individuals who were sometimes traveling into town with slave owners and carrying materials. They would see other individuals who were also slaves and would pass information on. That person receiving information would share that information later at the slave quarters. So these are kinds of things that, again, use those old newspapers, even if your ancestors were not enslaved. This is a tool for you, and anytime you see something that's available through estate archives, you want to stop and think, well, what are those possibilities of there being a tool for me to use? And you might say, well, my ancestors were not free until the mid-1860s, after the war, nothing there on my family. Really? You want to think outside the box. Was there something on the community where my family lived? And it will actually give you a different kind of appreciation for those other documents, those other resources that exist at state archives, at state libraries, at research facilities. It's another way of learning what the climate of life was like for your ancestors as well. These opportunities to think outside the box and to expand what we do are there. And I would encourage you to consider doing that. It enhances what you do. It enhances your research. And it opens your eyes to your own community in a very, very different way. Anyway, I'm going to stop for today. I thank you for taking a few minutes out of your day to listen to me. And of course, I appreciate you. I appreciate you for continuing to do what you do, and urge you to just keep at it, stay with it, which is to keep researching, of course. Keep documenting, and please keep sharing what you find. Anyway, take care. Have a great week, everyone, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.